This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Here to review the week in politics, as we do at this time each Friday, is Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Welcome.
Hey, Jeff.
You might have heard there were elections this week, no statewide races here, though there were mayoral races in many of North Carolina's largest cities. In Raleigh, Nancy McFarland emerged from a testy runoff. Charlotte voters elected a black woman for the first time, and in Fayetteville, a Republican incumbent was ousted by a Democrat. What was the most significant outcome from Tuesday, Rob?
Well, I think in general there was a progressive wave. There was a national progressive wave. There was a progressive wave here in North Carolina. I got a fundraising solicitation from Phil Berger yesterday in which he even said that the Democrats think they've got a wave going and he wants to stop it. So, I mean, I think the conservative powers that be, particularly in the North Carolina General Assembly, took a look at those election results, saw that people were mobilized by their opposition to the Trump-Pence team, and are very concerned. And I think it was, you know, you could see it in the local election results, in the enthusiasm level, the sort of surprising, I thought, voter turnout in some places. So, you know, hardly a lock that it's going to continue in 2018. But for now, there's definitely an anti-Trump-Pence progressive wave underway.
Well, I think, you know, the key phrase is there, it's hardly a lock. I think it's a little bit early. I think these elections are, it's just too early to make these assumptions with these tea leaves. There's still a lot going on. Looking at other states, you know, North Carolina is very different. But Jeff, to your question, right here in North Carolina, the takeaway, Fayetteville was the city that flipped from a Republican mayor to now a Democrat mayor. What we're seeing across the country is that more and more cities are being controlled by Democrats, where county commissions, legislatures, governorships, for the most part, you know, are controlled more by Republicans. So just, I think, sort of some interesting dynamics there. But still, Greenville and High Point, two of North Carolina's largest cities, are still controlled by Republicans. What this tells me is that we're still very much a purple state, going back and forth. You know, I think we're all looking for trends, but I'm not sure that they're really there yet. The other thing is voter turnout. You know, this was very low. I mean, I agree with Rob. I mean, it was higher than I thought it was going to be, but it was still very low. So this is a very small percentage of the voters who have spoken during this election. But I think, you know, to be honest, I think all of us are going to be keeping an eye on this, looking at this. I know political people, political consultants, and those who are with leaders in the Republican and Democrat Party are looking at the returns very closely.
Democrats did fare well nationally. Governorships in New Jersey, as expected, and Virginia, that was contested and close, were won by Democrats. Also in the Commonwealth, Democrats picked up what was a surprising number of seats in the House of Delegates. Now, as we've chatted about a little bit here, some national media outlets have concluded that this was a rebuke of President Trump, and it could signal conservative catastrophe in 2018. Becky, is it time for candidates and the party to abandon ties to Trump, or is it time to double down?
Well, I don't know, and we're seeing that. I mean, Mark Walker this week, I think, has said that he's going to continue to be an avid supporter of President Trump. Robert Pittenger has done that, where you're seeing some backing away a little bit with some other candidates. So I think that will be, at least now, yeah, it seems like that will be situation by situation. I think when you get down to our statewide races, our races for particularly the legislature that's coming up in 2018, I think what we're going to see is voters looking at and politicians responding to reforms that have been put into place with tax cuts, with reforms in education, regulatory reform, infrastructure, those kind of investments that are being made. Our economy is in good shape in North Carolina. I think those are the things that voters are going to be looking at, those kitchen table issues, rather than necessarily Trump versus non-Trump.
I think the Democrats are very much hoping that Republican candidates will tie themselves to Trump as much as possible. They see him as a singular divisive figure in the history of America, and his numbers are dreadful. He has nothing but bad news, it would seem, ahead of him in terms of his personal future and in terms of his legal future. I think they're very concerned about the policies that he is espousing. If you looked at the polls out of Virginia, the number one issue on people's minds was health care, which was obviously a rebuke to Trump and his efforts to sabotage the Affordable Care Act. In Maine, voters voted 3-2 in favor of expanding Medicaid over the objections of their very Trumpian governor. So I think the Democrats are just chomping at the bit and hoping very much that Republicans. Now, I will concede that there are districts in which, you know, very strongly Republican districts where maybe it will be beneficial to Republican candidates. But in general, Democrats are excited.
But something else that I think you really have to remember is nothing's being done in Washington. So people who like Trump or don't like Trump, I mean, the thing to remember is, you know, we've had no repeal, we've had no replace, we've really had no action on health care. People are very unhappy with it. They're unhappy with Obamacare. They're unhappy with the access to health care, with the cost to health care. I absolutely agree with you. I mean, that's something that's on voters' minds. They want a change. They want something to happen. I don't know what's going to happen with the tax cuts in Washington, but what we've seen more and more is there's a gridlock in Washington where things are happening. And North Carolina is a great example, and we are a national model to where things are happening, where innovation, where changes are being made, where economies are growing, where jobs are being created. Those are happening at the state. And so I think more and more Trump become, and really Washington becomes irrelevant because they can't do anything there.
But you've been following this for a long time, decades. And this president has the lowest polling numbers since polls began at this point of a presidency. Don't suburban Republicans and those in the North Carolina House or Senate who are going to face a formidable challenge next year, there are more races in the House and the Senate, don't they have to abandon Trump if they're going to win?
I don't know whether they abandon Trump or if they talk about the good things that they've done here. And I'm not sure that they have to abandon Trump in order to talk about the good things that they've done here. Again, tax reform, regulatory reform, investments in infrastructure. 400 net new jobs have been created in North Carolina. Our unemployment numbers are among the lowest in the country. North Carolina is a model with how to do things right, how to grow a strong economy. If I were advising the Republicans going into the election, it would be talk about what you've done, stick to your message. You've got a good message. I don't know whether that means you have to abandon Trump altogether, but they have a good story to tell in spite of Trump sharing a Republican label with them.
I guess just two brief points. One is that I think it's the patriotic thing to do. Whatever your politics are, the patriotic thing to do is to abandon Trump and to join the movement to oppose this terrible president that we have. But the second point I would make is with respect to the issues. You know, there was a poll out recently by the Civitas folks, the very conservative Civitas folks, who asked North Carolina voters what they thought about a single-payer Medicare for all Bernie Sanders health care plan. And North Carolina voters in a slanted Civitas poll were evenly divided. People are signing up in record numbers for Obamacare despite the efforts to sabotage it by the Trump administration. They're making the website go down on weekends, everything they can think of to do. And people are voting with their feet, voting with their pocketbooks. They want a kind of health care system like Obamacare offers. They want to improve it, but they don't want to do away with it. And if that's going to be the Republican platform, it's a losing platform.
One follow-up question. Briefly, I want to hear from each of you on Medicaid. The quick background is, in Maine, the legislature sent a Medicaid expansion bill to the governor on five different occasions. Governor, I believe it's LePage, vetoed it five different times. Voters got the opportunity this week to weigh in on whether or not they wanted to expand it. And as Rob mentioned earlier, by a 2-to-1 margin, right?
I think 3-to-2. It's like 60-40.
Okay. It was a comfortable margin that they voted to expand it. Just briefly, is that a sign that we're going to see Medicaid expansion efforts in other states next year? And what are the odds that we see it here in North Carolina?
There's actually been a bill in Congress to now give the authority to governors to make decisions on Medicaid expansion from Republicans and take it away from legislatures. So I think that there is a movement in this direction. I think that the people have made it clear they want this program to stay. They don't want to lose their pre-existing condition coverage and all the other benefits that came with the Affordable Care Act. We all recognize it needs some work, but it doesn't need the kind of sabotage and undermining it's here to stay, I think. And so I think the people have made it clear they want that to be the case.
Well, on your question about Medicaid and expansion, we have looked at that in North Carolina. There have been several bills. As a matter of fact, there was a bill last session proposed by Republicans that would expand. They don't call it that, but it would expand Medicaid. So, you know, we have looked at it. You know, here's the problem with that. Several things. First of all, we've had comprehensive Medicaid reform that we are still working through on the approval and waiver system that you have to go through in order to get that in place, trying to shore up our Medicaid system so that we know what it costs, we know who's covered, we know what the benefits are for those folks. There's a real effort. Let's make sure that's done right before we expand the program. The other thing that I think is important to note is in Medicaid expansion, the population that covers, in North Carolina, that would be about 75-80% of able-bodied, working-age, childless adults. You know, this was not what Medicaid was intended for. It was intended for pregnant women, children, aged, mm-hmm. disabled people. So this is a huge expansion of a national welfare program that I think North Carolina leaders have been very smart to say, let's hold up, let's wait, let's see what they're going to do at the national level, what that's going to look like, how North Carolina's Medicaid reforms are actually going to fold out before we obligate taxpayers to this huge expansion of a welfare program.
Anything else?
This is, of course, the program that Mike Pence expanded in Indiana. Lots of Republican governors have done. It saves thousands of lives a year. We know for a fact that thousands of North Carolinians die every year because of our refusal to take this step. It's an immoral act by the General Assembly not to expand Medicaid.
I do think the one rub that is interesting to just remind folks of is that Medicaid did expand in states with Republican governors. Pence in Indiana, Brewer in Arizona, and Christie in New Jersey. Those are the first three that – and Kasich in Ohio. And
doesn't mean it's the right thing for North Carolina.
No, but fair enough. I was going to say there hasn't been a lot of pushback in those four states, but North Carolina, a different beast.
And in those states where they have expanded Medicaid, the actual expansion enrollment has been many, many times what is anticipated. And what you're starting to see is a real pressure on those state budgets and how they're going to pay for it. I think North Carolina leaders are very wise and smart to take this slow and steady, get all the information they need before they expand this tremendous welfare program.
Meanwhile, on the opiate front, two seemingly unrelated stories caught my attention this week. The State Bureau of Investigation announced that a collection of unused drugs across the state resulted in 20 million dosage units of opioids. That's more than 13 tons. It's the most ever collected at one time. Also, in New Hanover County, officials announced that they will retain legal services to potentially sue wholesale distributors of opioids. Wilmington has been called ground zero for the epidemic here in North Carolina. Reasonable people agree that there are way too many prescription pain pills out there. Is litigation part of the answer to fixing this issue?
I think it's an all-hands-on-deck approach. I think local governments and local law enforcement officials and mental health officials, those that remain in our inadequately funded system, are desperate, and they're seeing just an enormous crisis across our country. Ironically enough, in some of the areas that voted most strongly for Donald Trump, many sort of Rust Belt communities across the country, but in North Carolina, Wilmington, you're right, is ground zero. This is a profound mental health crisis. It is, and until we get serious about funding the mental health infrastructure in our state, the law enforcement infrastructure, you know, I think we're not going to get very far with this. We can declare it an emergency, but until we get serious about it and start looking at things, I mean, the insanity of a policy that sends people to jail for possessing marijuana, but that gives them large, you know, pounds of opiates that are horrendously more addictive and dangerous. We've got some real fixing to do to our system.
Well, let's be clear. This isn't a Trump problem, as Rob seemed to allude. This was a problem that's been going on for a number of years, for decades, that has been in the making. And it's going to take a while. It's going to take a multi, as I agree with Rob, it's going to all hands on deck. You know, the thing that you mentioned about going after the wholesalers, can it be solved through litigation? You know, we've looked at the physicians prescribing the medication. We've looked at the pharmaceutical companies and making it available. Mental health has to be part of this issue. I think the danger with the opioid crisis that we have is to think that police officers alone can fix this, or physicians alone can fix this, or if we just build, you know, 100 new mental health beds, that will fix it. This is a problem that has been a long time in the making. It is very complex, it's very complicated, and it's going to take a lot of effort. And I think that the biggest part to me is to put that emphasis on mental health facilities, and, you know, at the end of the day, somebody makes the decision to take that pill. And to address those kind of things, to address that addiction, has to be key to the key to solving this problem.
But I do think it's worth noting that we do have large, I don't know if I want to use the word predatory, but certainly greedy multi-billion dollar pharmaceutical companies who have been irresponsible in you know, pushing these drugs on people. And litigation may very well be a useful tactic in forcing them to back down from the kind of irresponsible posture they've taken on this issue.
But when you say all hands on deck, I think it's important too, Rob, as you mentioned, there are things that can be done at the federal level, there are things that can be done at the state level, and there are things that can be done at the local level. And I think all of those government entities, as well as the faith community and others, need to be involved in this.
Rob Schofield writes for NC Policy Watch, part of the North Carolina Justice Center. Becky Gray is the Senior Vice President with the John Locke Foundation. Thank you both.